This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the benefits of sobriety. We talk about how they got sober, but we also spend some time talking about why they enjoy staying sober. And today I'm talking to Alex about his 3 benefits and how he's found a rather unique way to give back. Alex, hello. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm amazing and thank you very much for having me. Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's exciting.
So just share with us a little bit about your sober journey, because you've just celebrated, is it 2 years sober?
2 years, yeah. So yeah, I have been on probably for the last 3.5 years. You know, it took me probably 1.5 years to actually properly start my sober journey and fully accept coming into recovery. And last week I celebrated being 2 years clean and sober, which is a great start. But I always say, people say, oh, it's amazing, you know, you're doing so well. And, you know, and yes, I am. And I love the encouragement and I accept that. But bizarrely, I also accept that being an addict, it will be with me for the rest of my life. And I can't control when these sneaky thoughts or feelings still come to me. And how perverse was it that the night before my 2 year sober anniversary, did my brain decide to tell me that maybe I'm fixed now, maybe I'm okay now, maybe I've done 2 years, that's, you know, maybe I could go back to drinking, you know, on a normal level. And it was bizarre how it just came floating into my head. And it just showed me that as an addict, it will always be there for me, but that's okay. That is okay. It's not, I'm not going to fight against it anymore. And I'm not going to try and fix it because there's no fixing it. And I'm not going to fight against it because there's no winning. So I just accept that those thoughts or those feelings will come to me at times. And probably just like they did the night before my 2 years at the most bizarrest of times. Yeah. where you think to yourself, oh my gosh, where's that just come from? I haven't had a thought or a feeling like that for months and months. And then it just cropped up and, you know, it was, maybe it was meant to happen just to give me a gentle reminder. And I do believe in things happen for a reason these days. And maybe it was just a gentle reminder for me. It's okay to, you know, still have that thought or that feeling from times. All I have to do is know what to do and what choice to make when that thought or the feeling comes. And that's powerful. That's powerful, being able to do that. It takes a bit of work, shall we say.
It does. And it is that thoughts aren't magical. They can't make us act. They can take us by surprise, can't they? And it's like, well, the thought comes in and you go, wow, okay, I didn't expect that. Why did that happen? And the key thing is you didn't act. That's...
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. It's, you know, and there's no rhyme or reasoning for it, or, you know, and I could come up with 10 different analogies as to why it happened, but I will never know fully. And not knowing is okay as well, to be honest. And it's all the little bits that you've had to learn and that you go through on your journey, that it's okay not to know, and that I can't control the thoughts or the feelings that come into my body and my brain, but I can just choose what I do with them. And that is probably the biggest thing that I live by these days, that the only choice I've got is I choose what I do with that thought or that feeling.
That is so true. That is so true. There's space in between a thought and a feeling and then taking action. And so, yeah, absolutely. I certainly talk to people about that as well. It's that it doesn't mean you have to act, just sit with it. Just sit with the thought, it will pass. Just sit with the emotion, it will pass.
Yeah, and it's that age-old thing that it's going to be uncomfortable from time to time. An emotion or a thought can make you uncomfortable, or but an emotion or a thought won't kill you. And acting out on my addiction ultimately would have took me back to that place where I would probably be dead. So it's a very powerful shift in power. It is a shift in power, being sort of so reliant on the alcohol, to then turning it round and being able to control the thought or the feeling around it. And it does take a bit of practice, let's be honest. It
Oh, it
always does
does.
take a bit of practice.
Yeah.
Like anything in life, though, isn't it? Nothing you don't get you, nothing becomes permanent without a bit of practice, does it?
No, exactly. And it is empowering to take that control back. Because I've read your story. Tell the listeners a little bit about your story, whatever you'd like to share about going sober.
No, I mean, by all means, look, I guess, my drinking escalated largely. It really escalated when I was having some problems with my eyes, and about six years ago, something like that, I was diagnosed. Well, I haven't actually been diagnosed because they can't find what it is, but I've had some eye problems for years. And long story short, I've been to London, Liverpool, Manchester. I've had doctors queue up to have a look and do different tests. I've had gene tests, MRI scans, dye tests, injections in both eyes multiple times. I've had all sorts of stuff. And ultimately, I've lost 95% sight in my left eye. And there was a point about 2.5 years ago where it was looking like I was going to go blind. And my right eye was deteriorating badly to the point where I couldn't read text messages, I couldn't read emails, and I was beginning to have voice recognition stuff put on my phone, voice recognition stuff put on my emails, and I was basically almost preparing myself for what was looking in all likelihood was going to happen. But I chose obviously to emotionally carry on pushing everything down and running away from it and hiding from it and looking for the answer in a bottle. And I didn't accept that I had a problem. And it was when I got sent back into, and I say sent because my family did send me each time. I got sent back into my final rehab. And before I was going in, we were sat on my mum and dad's drive, and my 17-year-old son, as he was then, turned around to me and told me that he needed me. He needed me. He was 17 and he needed me. I was 42 at the time, and he said, Dad, you're 42 and you still need your parents. I'm 17 and I need you. And that was my biggest, most powerful, those three words, I need you, from my own son, was my turning point. And it was as hard as then the next journey was, it was my why. My son needed me, and I was gonna do what it took, do what it took. And I guess I always describe it as everything, I live my life by everything happens for a reason, and I needed that reason. I needed that reason at that time, and it was my turning point to throw in the towel effectively and stop fighting. And that was hard because I'd never been beaten by anything, in my life. I'd always found a way, and whether at work, personal life, I'd always found a way of fixing or getting through stuff, and I'd never sort of lost. And this was the first time that I had to accept defeat, and I couldn't beat addiction. And I was an alcoholic, and yeah, I had to accept it. And I had to then change my life and create a new life based upon the new me, effectively. And change was a big thing because I couldn't stay doing what I was doing and, living the life I was living previously and expecting to be able to abstain and to be able to not get caught up in feeling a lot of jealousy or sadness that I couldn't drink anymore. I had to change, but all the bits that I've started putting together in my life over the last couple of years, and all the changes I've put in place, it's all step by step positive changes. I'm never going to be perfect, but what is perfect? Who wants to be perfect? I continue to work on myself every single day. I'm very reflective and very thought-provoking to myself about, could I have dealt with things differently? I, offended somebody? Have I been a bit, arse, with somebody? Because, I still have every single emotion. And if I'm honest, I probably have more emotions these days than I've ever had in my life. Because I spent so long shutting all my emotions off, and hiding away from them all, that when I first started allowing emotions, it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was incredibly, draining, and probably because there was so much stuff pushed down and blocked, within my body, that when they started coming out, it was like somebody had took my batteries out for a few days.
Yeah, the floodgates opened.
Oh, well, I remember doing one of my pieces of work in my second rehab, and I ended up spending 2 days in bed. It just drained me, absolutely drained me, because it must have been stuff that I had pushed down for so many years, and basically it was just all came out, and I was emotionally wiped out for 2 days, physically wiped out after the emotional side of it. It was ridiculously powerful. And people probably looked at me or look at me, what? How can that be the case? But it's weird how if you've not allowed your body and not allowed yourself to have those emotions, and I'd pushed them down for 40 odd years, and the build-up of them must have been horrendous.
Yeah, and that can be exhausting, can't it? It's the cognitive energy of changing, of experiencing these things, thinking them through, can be absolutely exhausting.
I guess it's quite nice to like sort of be able to look back and see the overall journey over the last 3.5 years and the development. And I also like sharing the realism of my journey, that I still do have, the devil on my shoulder. I still, do find things hard at times. I'm not, going to say that sobriety for me as an addict is easy, because at times it's not perfect and it's not easy, but I can do so many little bits of change, little bits of positive things. And I spent so long drinking and, running away from everything, that now I want to embrace the time that I've got here, and I want to try and get the best out of, my life, and I want to try and give as much positivity and help to others as well along the way. And that encourages me. That really, drives me on these days, and it gives me another purpose and another why, to try and basically show other people that no matter what you've gone through or what you're going through, there is another way, and it will all be okay, if you keep that faith and you believe. Because I got to the point where at the end, I genuinely didn't care whether I was here or not anymore.
You were going through so much, though.
Yeah, but then I was going through so much on my own, because I
Yeah.
wouldn't speak to anybody. I wouldn't allow anybody in. I wouldn't accept any help. I wouldn't accept any support. I pretended to the outside world that I was fine, and I pushed everybody away, because it was easier to hide away and pretend that I was this strong alpha male that could cope with anything and everything, and make a joke of the fact that I could only see bits, and make a joke of everything, because that was easier than it was to actually allow myself to properly cry, tell people that I was scared, and ask for help. That was the harder thing to do, because of the era that I grew up in. I grew up in, where my belief was always that a man had to be strong, had to look after everybody else. A man couldn't cry, all the really old-fashioned beliefs that are so wrong. Totally so wrong. But that was, how it was back then. I never spoke about, my feelings or my emotions. It just didn't happen. So as soon as a challenge came in my life, it was, let's just run away from it. Let's just run away from it and hide effectively.
So when did you first start drinking? Was it in your teenage years?
I guess, teenage years, and I'm 44 now, and my era was, that you went to the pub and you drank as much as you could. Probably even before that, we went to the park and, sat in the park and drank White Lightning or whatever there was, back then. And it was everybody drank to get drunk. Nobody drank just to have, one or two drinks. Everybody drank to get drunk. And half the time, the people who were the most drunk were the funniest. You'd end up being sick more times than you wouldn't. And it was just that old style of association with alcohol. And I think the Gen Z these days, because there's a lot more facts, knowledge, resource available about health and about what it actually does and the benefits and the health side of things, a lot more of the Gen Z choose, which is amazing, choose to either not drink or be very controlled with their drinking. I do wonder, and I've never thought about this actually, I do wonder if that's because they're able to be a lot more open about their emotions and their thoughts and their feelings and communicate that than we used to be able to. Because certainly from my group of friends, school friends and stuff, we probably would never have spoken about, we'd never had a conversation about, oh, are you sad today? Why are you sad? We just wouldn't. It was, get on with it. And I wonder if we used it as ways of just coping with our blocked up emotions as well, because it was an easy way of running away from things. And I've never thought about that before, actually. So.
I was just thinking then, as you said that, I wonder if that, because we're similar ages, I'm a couple of years older than you, so I'm 46. So it was growing up in like the 90s, late 90s, isn't it, really? And
Yeah.
it was very booze heavy for women, but it was very booze heavy for men as well. And you're right, you'd socialize, you'd go to the pub, you'd, that was the only time really you did see your friends.
Yeah. And I don't know, I'll ask you the question. Did you used to speak about your emotions? Did you used to talk about your feelings? Did you,
No, I don't think we did. I was struggling with a lot of different things, an eating disorder. I was in a marriage I didn't want to be in really young. And I just, it's that old saying. Do you remember the old saying, you've made your bed, you lie in it? Kind of.
Yeah. It was always, I describe it as the Great British way of stiff upper lip and get on with it. And that was, and I think that, but that goes back generations as well, because I think about probably my parents' parents. And, it was so where you just basically stiff upper lip, get on with it. Nobody talks, nobody says anything. And then it's almost like, oh, you couldn't say that. What would the neighbors think? What would so and so think of you? You can't do that. Well, actually, I can. If I want pink hair, I'm going to have pink hair these days. And I don't care. But it took me a long time to get to that inner peace with myself and a lot of reflection. And it's nobody's fault. This is just the changes in the generations and the progress and over the years, over the eras. And I guess what's amazing is that the Gen Z, the younger generation, like my son's 20 next month, and he's got a good association with alcohol. He can go to the pub and have one. He can not drink for 2 or 3 weeks and then he'll have a bingy night out, but he always stays in control, which not like me. I was always the one that basically would be first to the pub and last out the door, and that was my way of association with drink. Yeah, he's got a lot, and so have a lot of his friends. They've got It's not the center of the universe. Drink isn't anymore, which is great. They enjoy going and doing things without alcohol. They enjoy playing their sports. They go to the gym. They do, you know, a lot more of a balanced, healthy life. And maybe it is just about the amount of information and knowledge and learning that's out there these days about, and I wonder if it is moving more in that direction. If you could stop the world today and look at what the world would be like in another 25 and then 50 years, I do wonder if alcohol will diminish quite a lot as a part of the culture and a part of the way of we live. But who knows? Who
I don't
knows?
think so. I saw on like one of the local Facebook groups somebody complaining about the local supermarket having alcohol under lock and key now. Now I think that's more to do with like people pinching it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But when you think back with cigarettes, obviously they were once you had to stare at them to pay for your shopping. You know, they were always behind the till. Whereas now they're under lock and key and they're covered so that if somebody is trying to quit, it does make it less triggering. So it would be lovely to think that some of these things could change.
Yeah, and I think they will. I genuinely think they will. I think the UK is probably one of the worst, I think, for a drink culture. Because you look at some of the other countries, and some of the other countries, they'll have a glass of wine or two glasses of wine, and that's enough. And, you know, they don't go and have that boozy, boozy binge drinking culture that the UK has. But I was really pleased. I was reading some stats the other day in Germany, who are massive beer drinkers, as a nation. 14% of the beer that's drunk in Germany now is non-alcoholic. That is massive, absolutely massive. And that's only going to go one way.
It does show those cultural shifts are happening.
But it just takes time. It just takes time. And people sort of talking, understanding, realizing, and for some people, it's not a good mix. For other people, it might be, and that's okay. I don't tell anybody not to drink because that would be me being a big hypocrite. If you've got a good association with alcohol, you know where your limits are, and you just drink to just, you know, enjoy it. Absolutely, that's your choice. Whereas if you're drinking to run away from stuff, if you're drinking to medicate, if you're drinking to just to get blottoed, I think you need to just ask yourself why or what's the actual underlying stuff that's going on. It doesn't sound a great situation. And it's just being aware for me and also thinking, yeah, being mindful about why am I drinking? Why am I drinking? Have I had a stressful day? Yeah, I've had a stressful day. What would be a good way of doing it? Maybe going to the park for an hour with the kids, or going walking the dog, or getting some fresh air, going and chatting to one of my friends, you know, or go for a walk around somewhere with one of my friends and air off. Lovely. Or do I just go and hide away and drink a bottle, two bottles of wine, and then wake up feeling like shit?
It's sort of the point you go from drinking for a reason, right? You know,
Yeah.
rather than I'm having a glass of wine and I can just leave it at that and I won't bother about it for the next couple of weeks. Like you said, your son does. That was never me. If I was going to do something, it would be every night or, you know, most nights. And then I'd really struggle not to do it.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same as you. I would never have been able to just have one. That's why I look at him sometimes and think, what's the point? Hey, what's the point? How can you go and have one pint? I'm like that. It's bizarre. It's just like aliens to me. If I'd had one pint, then it would have been like seeing in a day's time, 2 days. I might have just been kept on going. Now I am a completely different person in my emotions, the way I communicate, the way I deal with absolutely everything, to how I was for the first 42 years of my life. So it's almost you've got version one of me, and this is like version 2.0. I've like almost been lucky enough that I've had a fresh start, and all the changes I've made and all the positive things that I'm bringing into my life and all the good that I'm trying to give back is all part of version 2.0. And I can't change anything that I did in version one. And what's done is done. And, it's part of my journey and part of my lessons and part of my learning. But 2.0, I've got a choice over. Got a choice what I do in 2.0, and that's the nice thing. It's almost let's make some good choices, let's make some positive things happen, let's make sure that I'm enjoying my life, let's make sure that we're trying to show other people that there is another way.
Yeah.
Just because I'm an addict, an alcoholic, doesn't mean that I can't have a good life. It doesn't mean that my life is ended. It doesn't mean that I'm any different to anybody else. I've not got four heads. I've not got eight arms. I've still just a normal person. And I just have to find a way of creating a life that is right for me and that I enjoy and that I can show the world I can still have a great time.
Which brings us so neatly on to the sort of what I ask my guests on here to talk about, which is the three main things or areas that have changed for the better in sobriety. Because however you get to sobriety, it is a good thing, isn't it? It's something that actually can open a lot of doors for you and can really improve your life in so many ways. We think alcohol's going to do that, but actually it's sobriety that tends to. So, what would you say your first area, if we talk about the first one?
Connection. And I think connection is not just vocally, it's also emotionally as well, and allowing myself to connect and to feel different things. Because, as I said before, I've always, or previously, I'd always closed myself off to the emotional connection. If something bad happened, I would just shut down and basically pull out and emotionally detract myself away from it and just ignore it. If something really good happened, I could do the same as well. I was very emotionally defunct, if I'm honest. It was almost like sort of robot-esque, of way of, and it was probably a protection mechanism for me that I would just basically pull the shutters down and pull back. But because I was so closed, I never allowed myself to have that real closeness of connection with other people. I never allowed myself to be vulnerable, to actually be honest, about how I truly felt. And half the time, I probably didn't even know how I truly felt because I wouldn't sit with it. I'd run away from it. Any emotion that was a bit uncomfortable, I would choose to run away from it. So I didn't actually allow myself to actually know how I truly felt. And that's changed. That's really changed. My connection with people is probably the best I've ever had it in my life because I'm actually my authentic self. I'm totally true, to how I feel and what I'm thinking. And I'm also vulnerable at times. So if I'm worried or if I'm upset or if I'm sad or, I will actually tell people and I'll be honest. I'll be honest and basically share, but I'm not sharing for a reaction. I'm sharing because I'm allowing myself to connect with people so they fully understand me. They fully understand me. They can connect with me on, a more intimate, understandable level. And they know how I'm wired, what makes me tick. So I guess that's the emotional connection. And then the connection of learning to speak to people, about how you feel. And I've almost challenged myself to do it in a work environment where I'll be vulnerable and lead from the front. And I'll speak about, well, this upset me the other day because of X, Y, and Z, or, and I was really frustrated with this. And it, because you're leading with the vulnerability, it encourages others to be honest and to be open. And that connection is really powerful, because you build a closeness. You build a closeness from the connection. And it's so strange because people are being their authentic selves, add in a bit of vulnerability and sort of open the door for people to walk through it, and all of a sudden everybody starts sharing, everybody starts connecting, and there's no mind altering substance involved. So the whole connection is really powerful. And even on a social basis, that's true. Instead of people being 5, 10 drinks in and talking utter nonsense, you're actually connecting. And it's a lot more powerful.
It is. I mean, how can you build relationships? So you're trying to connect with people, but if there's no vulnerability there, and I like you say, going down the pub, drinking, just chatting shit, you're
But
not
yeah, basically,
connecting.
you're not actually dealing with anything. You're not actually processing. You're not actually having time to reflect. You're just, yeah. And it's powerful sharing, because somebody else might help you to look at things in a slightly different way. For example, if you've had an argument with your girlfriend, partner, wife, husband, whatever, and you might go, oh, and they've been so unreasonable. And somebody else might go, well, you told me the other week that the mum or dad's having a really tough time, and they might be a little bit worried about that. You thought about that potentially, and you almost go, maybe they've got a point. And then you go home and you actually have that conversation. You found, like, yeah, the other person's really stressed, and that's why they've been a bit antsy with you. And it's like, oh, right, okay. Instead of, and it's almost putting together pieces of the puzzle sometimes. And I guess it's almost a why. Ask yourself why sometimes. I think there's a rule of 5 whys, 3 whys, something like that. And they use it for if somebody's late to work, somebody comes in late to work, and you can either discipline them or you can find out why they're late for work. And by the time you ask the fifth why or third why question, you should have a good understanding. And it's like, to give you an example, you could ask, okay, so why were you late this morning? And somebody goes, oh, I was late because my alarm didn't go off, so I just didn't wake up. And then, okay, right, that's fair enough. You've got the answer. But then you might find out that you ask, can I just check, how come you were late this morning? And somebody goes, well, yeah, my mum's father-in-law's got cancer, and so I've been having to go and do the run and drop stuff off there, and then the bus was late, and then I had to do this and do that and do that. And you think, actually, you've got a hell of a lot going on. Is it the end of the world that you were 10 minutes late this morning? No, I don't think so. Yeah, okay. And it's understanding, and it's finding out and connecting with people on that personal level, and being able to connect and give things back and have an understanding, I think.
Do you find that you listen better as well? So you sort of you listen out and notice maybe when one of your friends isn't as happy as they normally are.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. 1,000,000%.
So it's
Yeah.
improving connection both ways, isn't it? It's like
Oh, yeah. And I think it also encourages people to come to you and to ask you, because people understand that, that you are open, that you are very measured, and that you are, totally fair, because you look at things from both sides. You won't just look at it, with one, you won't just take sides. You'll look at the overall bigger picture and try and get an understanding as to what's causing that. Because there is genuinely, if somebody's acting really out of character, there is normally a cause. If somebody's, a good person, and they're acting all of a sudden, they start throwing axes at you or something, there's normally a cause, as to why they're trying to then kill you.
Yeah. Was Alex the drinker then? Was he just focused on the drink and maybe a few cracks, a few laughs?
It progressed, definitely, just like the illness is progressive. It used to be fun, it used to be fun, the center of attention, the joker, bringing everybody together, having the party time. And then, at the end, it was on my own, in a corner of a room in a dark place, where it was just dependent on next drink, it was just. Yeah, it was a horrendous place, to be honest.
That's a horrible
Absolutely.
place to get to.
Listen, I didn't have a life. It was an existence, and it was an existence that I didn't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
That's and I was probably on a path to self-destruct and abuse my body as much as I possibly could until the point it gave up, or until the point that, that was the path I was on. And yeah, it's sad, really sad. It was such a lonely place as well. But that was through choice as well, because I wouldn't let anybody else in.
Like you say now, it's in sobriety, it's about connection.
Oh yeah, 1,000,000%, 1,000,000%, and that's the it is it's version one, version 2.0.
So, what was your second thing?
I'm going to say my second thing is giving back, because coming into sobriety and coming into recovery, you feel bored. It's bizarre. You feel bored and you feel like you've got loads of time on your hands, and you feel like you can't do everything that you used to do, and you feel, that it's not fair. You stamp your feet, you want to be able to still be able to drink. Why is it me that has got this? Why, poor me, whatever. And it's okay, so let's just stop and think about all the time that we wasted, drinking, abusing our bodies, running away from stuff. Why don't you have a little focus on what you really enjoy, what you get something out of, and go and connect with people and go and try and give something back? Because I moved areas and I moved house, and I've always done boxing, and I just walked into the local boxing gym about just under 2 years ago, and said, could I possibly come and help? Just help out. I'll do whatever. And since then, I've gone and done my coaching badge, and I teach the kids, adults, everything about 2, 3 times a week now, and I have done for the last 2 years. And I get to have that banter, the fun in the gym. I get to build a community of, it's like a family. The gym is like a family. So I get to have all that fun that I used to have, probably more, in fact, more fun than I used to have on nights out, because it would get to the point where I was too pissed and I didn't even know what I was doing. So I get to have genuine, authentic fun by giving something back and by having volunteered to do something that I enjoy. And it's building that connection again. And that, for me, is so rewarding, because I see some of the girls that started, I've seen the progress of being not wanting to be in the group with the boys, not wanting to speak to anybody, being totally shy, hiding away, to then being like one of the leaders in the gym 2 years later. And it's like, wow. And so again, likewise, some of the boys, the boys who've been a little bit bullied or a little bit different or a little bit shy coming in, then just sitting talking to them and thinking back and going, if I had somebody I could have sat with when I was this age, it would have really helped me. It would have really helped me. And I just feel like if, take what has given us problems and try and do something positive with it. Because we've all got a lot to give. And one thing I've definitely learned and definitely witnessed is that every single addict is a really sensitive soul. Deep down, is a really sensitive soul. They've all got a lot of love and a lot of stuff to offer people. So, giving something back would be one of my biggest things. And also, I do that with, the work side, the charity side. We raise, money now for the National Association of Children of Alcoholics. We've done that for the last 2 years. We're doing an event with a suicide charity next month, raising awareness and raising funds for them. Just trying to bring good people together. Just do a few nice things, because the world's a tough enough place at times without a few of us coming together and trying to do good stuff.
Yeah, because you do events as well, don't you?
Certainly do. I guess that brings us nicely on to the last one. So I've said about connection, I've said about giving back, and then it's changing stuff. And the biggest thing when I came into recovery that I said I was going to change is I was going to show the world that you can still do anything. whether you drink or whether you don't drink, and that I do not need alcohol to have a good time. It had almost proven it to me. I spent 5 months in total in rehabs, in different rehabs, and the connections I made of spending, 4 or 6 weeks with people, and we all like had dinner together, and we all sort of hung out at night together, and we had some of the most good, fun, genuine giggles, and that, almost going back to the childhood of before I drank, I, had amazing connection and all that fun, that you could always have the belly laughs, the messing around, dancing, singing, being silly, playing games, everything was, you still had those good times. And it showed me that it was still possible, and that it was like almost, actually, we don't need alcohol. And it just proved it to me. So when I came out, I spoke to a great friend of mine, Bern, and Bern and I set up Clarity just under 2 years ago. And since we set up the Clarity Group, and it's Clarity, TEE for teetotal, which a few people go, oh, that's quite cool.
That's clever.
Yeah, no. So it's, yeah, it's teetotal, but without knowing it. And we've done five big corporate events across the UK. And we've done, did the Shine Awards last in September in Liverpool, which was the UK first company awards do that was non-alcoholic, no alcohol. Alcohol free. We had 250 people there, raised a load of money for Nicoa, had some celebrities like Callum Best and various different people come and support, be there on the night. We did three or four of our own last year in Liverpool, Manchester, called Be the Spirit. And it's all about bringing companies and people together and showcasing. And we do like a very special night that is three course meal. Gameplay, you're playing games against each other, it's all inclusive, live entertainment, music, DJ, all the whole shebang, along with some inspirational speakers and stuff. Yeah, and we've had, nearly a couple of thousand people now come to these over the last, I've had no negative feedback, zero negative feedback. But like anything, it takes time. It takes time because companies still want the boozy culture, still want the boozy culture, and the shift is going to take time, and it's consistency. But then it made me go, right, well, that's not enough for me to just be doing the corporate. So I want to do everybody and anybody. So we set up Club Clarity, and we do individual events which bring anybody and everybody together. Anybody who's in recovery, anybody who's sober curious, anyone who fancies coming and socializing at an alcohol-free night, anybody who drinks but just wants to try it. So it's for anybody and everybody. And we've been doing Liverpool, Chester, London, Manchester, and I want to go to like a couple of other places next year. I've got Ibiza is one of my ones that I want to
And
do.
do Herefordshire.
And yeah, listen, I've got a vision for the next 5 years being everywhere across the UK. And
Brilliant.
that is what I want to do, because I just want to carry on showing people that we are enough as we are, and as your authentic self, we are enough. And it was nice because we did an event in the W Hotel in London last week, and a couple of doctors came. And obviously, London doctors, you would associate with quite boozy culture and all the rest of it. And one of the doctors, she came up to me afterwards and she said to me, can I just say, I drink, but tonight and the social atmosphere and the connection, I think I've found my place. I think I found my new social environment. It was absolutely amazing, and I think I've had the best night I've ever had, and it's my first alcohol-free event. And I was like, okay, thank you very much. That's like very motivating. So yeah, I know we're on, the right path, but is it easy? Is it buggery? It's not easy. And trying to change things isn't easy. And now I'm holding my hands up and going, okay, I need help. I need to help to grow. You know, I need help to grow and people to talk, people to share what we're doing, because I can't do it everything on my own, you know, and we can't do everything on our own. But what we can do is carry on creating a lovely, sociable, safe environment for everybody and anybody to come to. And what I love about our nights is that there's no judgment. You know, anybody can wear whatever they want, and nobody looks and goes, "Well, oh, what are they wearing?" Whereas if you wore something slightly different and you walked into a pub where everybody was drinking, you imagine the amount of elbows or the amount of people would be. And it's like, it's so refreshing. Genuinely, it is so refreshing to have that safe, open, no judgment, and you can be yourself.
Yeah.
I dance like a madman, and everyone thinks I'm absolutely crazy, but I love dancing. But I love dancing. So it's like, I don't care. Whereas years ago, I would have felt uncomfortable. I would have felt like people were judging me and people were going, oh, what's he doing? And now I'm just like, well, if I'm happy, I'm happy. That's the most important thing. So if I want to dance, I'm going to dance.
Sobriety gives you confidence.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Yeah, you think alcohol is giving you the confidence to dance. But then you've got this sort of more genuine confidence when you're sober. Really love that. I love the lady said that to you because that was the thing that I was thinking as you were talking there. I sometimes don't feel safe. I'm not somebody that necessarily goes out very often. And I think a lot of that is because when there's a lot of heavy drinking around, even though I was drinking myself, it just didn't feel safe to me. But yeah, it is. It's nice to think it's a nice, safe environment and that it's open to people that are sober curious. So that, like that woman said, she's found her place.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and when I first set it up last year, I've got a lot of friends who are still heavy drinkers. You know, I've been in the legal profession for years, and you know, I've got a lot of friends who are still heavy drinkers, and I obviously was bullying them all to come and basically come to my events, and they were looking at me going, "You can do one if you think I'm coming to an alcohol-free event." But over the last 2 years, they've actually give them the due. A lot of them have come and tried one of our nights, and the nice thing is they've actually all gone, do you know what, it was really good. You know, I'm not going to tell you, I'm not telling you properly, but it was actually really good and I had a really good time. And I don't expect them to come all the time, because you know, and but that's fine. But if they choose to come to one or two a year, then I think for me that's a great start. Because it's a great start in making change and showing people, giving people a choice. Because ultimately, it's your choice if you come to one of our events or if you go to the pub and sit and get smashed. That's your choice. Or you might be, you know, a person who just enjoys two pints, and that's your choice as well. I'm not telling anybody what to do. I just want to be able to give people a choice and give the people a safe environment, a nice environment. And a different new way of socializing with normal connection, nice connection. It's a journey. I'll have to come back in 5 years and chat to you, and we can go, do you remember what you said you were going to do in 5 years? Let's have a little reflection of this and see how you've done and where you are now. And
You've got to find that purpose as well, haven't you? I mean, that's part of why I do this podcast and the things that I do, and I'm still active on the sober community and will remain so, you know, because actually you've got to feel like you're giving back. You know, you're right. There is an element. I smiled when you said there's a boredom in early sobriety. You know, there is, it opens up and it's actually right. Okay, what can I do to fill this space? And actually, it's not boredom, it's peace. But it's actually that you've got this space and you can give back and do things. And this is your passion.
oh, listen, I've got a normal law firm that I run still, and then I'm running this as well, and I've got like effectively two full-time jobs, and I'm coaching the boxing, I'm doing all this other stuff, but I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change it,
No.
because I love it, because it's my passion. And when I get moments like I got from the lady doctor speaking to me, when I get messages off people, when I get text messages, when I get, some feedback, it inspires me. It inspires me. And, the harsh reality of it is, I've come from a place of hell, where I'd got to, and I've lost a lot of friends over the last few years, to this disease, leaving behind kids and, families and the impact and the knock on and the massive effect. And I just think, fuck, I've, just keep going. I can't fix anybody else. I can't fix anybody else, and I accept that, but I can try and help to give other people a choice. And that's where my driver comes from. The more choice I can give people, the hopefully, and maybe I might be able to inspire a couple of people as well, to show that it is possible.
Absolutely. Everybody's journey is so different. Everybody's situation is so different, isn't it? And I'm so sorry that you've lost people. It's alcohol is a horrendous liquid, really. I went through a very sort of angry phase with it, angry for falling for it. It was like, how did I fall for this? I kind of knew what I was getting into when I started smoking at 16, but sorry, mum. But it took years to quit, but I was fully aware of all the dangers and everything else. And I think that's the thing, is if we can promote more sober events so that people think, oh, well, my life's over now, I'm not drinking because I've not got anywhere to go to, I've not got anybody to socialize with, I'm going to lose my friendship group. Well, actually, you can make better connections, new connections, and you've got more time to do things, so you've got more space. Like you say, two full-time jobs and you're volunteering in the boxing centre. No.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah.
I've done something very similar. I'm sort of doing the masters, moving house, doing everything else all at the same time.
It's the way we do it. It's the way we do it. And I've had to change though. I've had to change and like find a bit of a better balance, because I could literally work 24 hours a day and I would still have 24 hours worth of work to do every single day. So I'm like, I've had to accept that I can't do everything all the time, find a balance. And with the boxing, I had to give up a night, because I would have been there every night and, wanting to do everything. And I've had to accept, that, okay, there's a balance, because then it's sustainable. Because I used to be all or nothing. So I'd be either at the gym 7 days a week, training twice a day, or I would be not doing anything. And now it's like a nice steady balance.
And do you find that easier to achieve in sobriety? You sort of bring a more
Yeah.
level-headed approach to things.
Yeah, totally. But it takes practice. It does take practice. It's work on yourself, because the addict in me goes, let's train every day, let's do it for 3 months, and then we'll be like this. Look, that's what you'll look like. And I'm going, shut up, hey, shut up, let's just be comfortable, tick over, do a nice couple of sessions regularly, and then I'll keep that as my routine for the rest of my life, rather than being like up down up down up down. Reflect, slow it down, and know that everything will be okay.
And what would you say to yourself, sort of back at the start, if you were to be able to whisper in your own ear and just give yourself a piece of advice?
Oh, it takes more to be vulnerable than it does to run away. The stronger person is able to be vulnerable and ask for help. That is the stronger person. It's easier to run away and to hide from your problems than it is to face them.
Oh, it has been amazing talking to you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I'm so grateful you had this hour to spare. Thank you.
Don't be daft, it's fine. Honestly, it's a pleasure, because look, I just love giving back, and I'm trying my best to keep on reaching out to different pockets of people and sharing and talking about what we're trying to achieve, because I can't do it on my own, and it's meeting people, connecting, we'll get you to one of our events, then you can be telling everybody, come to Portsmouth as my guest next month.
I'll have to see about that. That's quite a distance from me, mind. It's more
Listen, it's
than
5 hours for me. I've been roped into doing it there, and I'm like, oh God, it's 5 hours away. And everyone's like, well, you've done it now. You said you're going to do it, so I've got to go.
Absolutely. Herefordshire is closer, is all I'm saying. All I'm saying, it might be quite rural, but it's, the centre of my universe.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll get you out of your universe. You'd enjoy it, honestly.
I will do, and I will definitely come to one of your events. Absolutely. And good luck spreading the word across the country. And if anybody wants to find out more about the events, what I'll do is I'll put a link in the show notes to your website, okay? And to your
Amazing.
Instagram profile. So
Yeah.
just thank you so much for your time. It has been really, really lovely to get to know you better.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I've loved it. I've loved it. So just keep in touch. Honestly, it's part of the family now. That's the Clarity family is growing and you're now part of it. So welcome.
Excellent. If you'd like to find out more about Alex, then you'll find the links in the show notes. And as always, you can find my links there too to my website and Instagram profile. On my website, you can find out more information about my Sober Resilience course. And if you use code SOBERREBEL544, you'll get a discount. And you can find out more information about the sobriety support packages that I offer, or just having a session. Thank you so much for listening today.